The downtown temperature outside the studios, 4 degrees.
A good wet morning to you. This is Wayne McLean. Welcome to the talk show. There was a very interesting story that crossed my desk the other day. You probably heard about it on CFPL Radio News as well. Oh, back Friday, I'm sure. This has to deal with the federal government of Canada. They've set up a special committee, and they want to find out, primarily from men, why some men are interested in pornography. Oh, whether it's video cassettes, that seems to be the thing they're concerned about the most. I'm sure they're also thinking about some of the books, the various magazines that you see from time to time. And the committee that's being set up feels that men are the primary majority consumers of pornographic materials, whether they be, as we say, hardcore or softcore. Here's the quote. The consumers of pornography appear to be predominantly male, says the 7-member committee. Oh, by the way, they're going to look into prostitution as well. But this morning I'd like to talk about pornography. Now, if you think about this, you come up with a lot of different questions or considerations. And it seems to me that men are not the only consumers of pornography. Okay? It also seems to me that there are a number of women, possibly, who like pornography as well. How old are they? What types of lifestyles do they lead? I don't know. Maybe you can tell me that. But if you agree with this idea that men aren't the only ones who like pornography, that there are probably more women out there who do than we know, if you agree with that, I'd like to hear from you at 433-3121. If, on the other hand, you don't agree with that, I'd really like to hear from you at 433-3121. If you're out of town, we invite you to call collect. What say you? Are men basically the only ones that are consumers of pornography? Or are there an awful lot of women out there who buy it or have someone get it for them and watch it or consume it or use it in any way? How do you feel this morning? 433-3121 is the number. If you're out of town, we invite you to call collect. This whole question of pornography, back in the news again, as the federal government sets up a committee to find out why some people are interested in it.
This is the Wayne McLean Talk Show. To join the conversation, call 433-3121. Out of town, call collect. 433-3121. Call now.
Mark, you're next on 980. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hello, Wayne. Wayne, I was... One of the big misconceptions is that a number of women seem to think that girly magazines represent pornography. I mean, when we talk about girly magazines, we're talking about the ones we do generally see on the newsstands that feature various women exposed in various contortions and what you might call erotic or pornographic positions. But actually, pornography is... The reason women aren't interested is because there are no men and women doing anything that would interest them. In fact, the magazines exclusively appeal to men. The ironic part is that pornography is illegal. In other words, the sexual things that would interest women in films and magazines is banned. And that's why women aren't interested in them. If I may be so bold as to say, I have a number of these tapes myself. Some of them are very good and some of them are only average. Of
course, okay, now what kind of tapes are they?
Well, we're talking about highly sexually explicit films, and now without the violence and the bondage, because, you know, it's surprisingly, those things are extraordinarily rare anywhere, and most people aren't interested in them. And because I'm married, my wife and I, we're not interested in those. And that's the very odd point, is that these video cassettes are being viewed by couples. But, I know this because I've lent them to many couples, and the women like them.
But the cassettes, though, what would the police do if they found the cassettes?
In my home?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's legal to own them yourself. I don't know. I'm probably confessing to a crime by saying I lend them to friends. I'm certainly not into the business of manufacturing making money.
No, I understand what you mean.
But I do believe it's still illegal to admit that I've lent them to people.
Okay, well, let's move away from that then. You know,
it's important to acknowledge, though, that women like those. But the thing is, that's illegal, so women generally aren't exposed to them. And so when the people come on the air and say, listen, this does nothing for me, well, that's very understandable. Those magazines that are sold in the variety are oriented towards men, and until the law is relaxed, until we can have things that are being promoted for couples openly and for women, I don't mean openly so that children can see that, I just mean that you can go in and buy it privately from a video shop and take it home and watch it for the weekend and take it back. Women, unfortunately, are going to be left out in the cold on this.
Okay, but you know as well as I do that there have been a lot of raids of various stores in this community by the police. Now, I don't want to get into a great thing because I'm not sure if some of it isn't before the courts, but in general terms, the police are saying, look, these things, these video cassettes, are pornographic. You can't sell them. You can't have them. Oh. And yet Canada Customs is saying, as I understand it at least, they're not.
Oh, no. Actually, you can't bring them in over the border either. No, they're both consistent. Both of them are wrong.
Oh, okay.
Is that they're calling it pornography, and I still do not understand why consensual sexuality is still regarded in such horrified terms. Even I still wonder why when people see Playboy magazine or a beautiful woman on the front cover, why they get offended. What is it about sex that makes us so distraught, so upset? And then further, too, with certain feminists and groups, why is it that sex and money together, like prostitution is really sex and money, and Playboy magazine is sex and money? And I think, what is about the profit motive that people are really upset?
Well, I think what you got to try to do, though, too, and in fairness, is when the women's groups get upset and they picket or whatever, I think what they're saying is that, take Playboy, for instance, or Hustler, they feel that these women are being exploited. They feel that that these women that appear in there are being stereotyped and that they are being abused and degraded and all the rest of it. That's their point.
I certainly have no argument that they're being stereotyped. You know, one of the things that a number of people want to deny is that these women, they say these women are being treated as sexual objects. Well, of course they are. The magazines are being bought for sexual purposes. These people aren't buying these magazines to have an intellectual conversation. They're buying them to get sexual gratification from them in more cases than not. And this is their only purpose. If they wanted an intellectual conversation, they'd pick up something else, or they get involved in women in another kind of sense. Remember, men do not read these magazines 24 hours a day. They're not totally consumed by these magazines. They do have normal conversations the rest of the day. They do meet people at work, and they do many other things, including watching movies, TV, reading newspapers, magazines, books, and you name it.
The other thing the women's groups feel that some of these magazines do is cause men to be aggressive and cause men to be violent against women in not only attitude, but in some cases, conduct.
Well, you know, Jules Pfeiffer, he's a writer, he had a very interesting phrase. He says, any work of art or any work that can incite me to violence is the work of a great writer. And, you know, he had a really interesting point. You know, what kind of thing is powerful enough to motivate one of us to go out and actually commit a crime? You know, I've really not read too many things or heard of many people that said, you know, or even were reported later on to a psychologist by having said, you know, this work was so incredible, this was such a talented work that I was motivated to go out and commit a crime or an act of whatever.
Mark, can you wrap it up briefly?
I just would like people to put things in perspective, that when men buy these magazines, it's simply one item in a long day. It's simply something they do in context with many other things. And that I'd like to say that if most of this sexually explicit material were available, women would be buying it and would enjoy it and would know exactly what's going on.
Thank you so much for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. When we come back, we have on our live line from Ottawa the Honorable Mark McGuigan, Canada's Justice Minister, and we'll be speaking to him for a few moments about this particular committee and some of the things that he has to deal with from his standpoint as the Justice Minister. So you stay tuned for that. Mark McGuigan when we return. On our live line now from his office in Ottawa, the Honorable Mark McGuigan, Canada's Justice Minister and also Member of Parliament for Windsor-Walkerville. Good morning, Mr. McGuigan.
Good morning, Wayne.
I know that you're in between meetings and you're in a hurry, so if we could get to some of the issues here. As you know, there is this committee set up to look into pornography, and of course there are other things as well. What is the committee trying to find out?
Well, let me explain that when I announced the setting up of a committee last June, I also announced that certain major changes in the law would be made even before the committee reported with respect to pornography, and certain lesser changes with respect to street soliciting. And then I set up the committee to look at other aspects of the problem. The committee will be reporting sometime in 1984, and, well, they'll really be looking at the whole field in both cases.
What is the law now, Mr. McGuigan, on pornographic material? Are there definitions that are specific?
Yes. Pornography is very briefly the undue exploitation of sex or of sex linked with certain other elements such as violence, cruelty, crime, or horror. Now, what I'm proposing to do in my amendments, which, as I say, are very major amendments, is to sever the requirement that pornography consists in some form or other of the undue exploitation of sex. That's missing a lot of the materials that are coming out now, which have been stressing cruelty and violence. And so I'm providing for a new definition, which would be the undue exploitation of sex or of crime or of horror or of cruelty or of violence.
Now, does that mean if we went to see a picture like Amityville or Halloween Part 3, where they are presenting horrible, gruesome, graphic scenes, that would be illegal?
Well, I haven't seen those films, and so I can't really say. It would be for a court to decide in any given case where a charge is laid. But the possibility arises, yes. It wouldn't be the person who goes who would be in difficulty. It would be the person who was producing the film.
One of the things in the paper that we discussed earlier on the program are the three options regarding pornography: banning it completely, making it legal, but subjecting it to licensing and zoning controls, as you know, or freeing it of the law altogether. Are those valid options in your mind?
No, they're not. In the view of the government, pornography is far too serious in its social consequences to be treated that way. The fact is that there is strong evidence to suggest that indulging considerably in pornography increases the likelihood that people will perform antisocial acts, and from aggravated sexual assault on down through lesser crimes, and sometimes, of course, this even results in murder. So this is far too serious to play around with.
But there are many people, surely, who witness pornography, and it has no effect on them at all.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. But we have to be concerned also about the weaker members of society, and it may be that people who have more of an inclination that way, subjected to a considerable diet of this, even at their own choice, may end up by engaging in such acts. In the rooms of many people who have engaged in killings, for instance, in sex killings, they've found a great deal of pornography.
Just one last point, Mr. McGuigan, and I'll let you go because I know you have other things to tend to. Some of our callers this morning on this issue have mentioned, well, look, if we license or don't license or do whatever, is there not something to be said for saying to the participants, the people who are photographed, the people who take part in these video cassettes, where explicit sexual activity takes place, if we say to them, if you do this, that you will face severe consequences, would that be a possibility?
Well, I think it's more realistic to get at the people who are distributing it, if that's what you're asking about. But if you're saying just to appeal on an educational basis to the people who might be indulging, I don't think that would be satisfactory at all, no.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGuigan. I appreciate your time today.
Okay, Wayne, glad to talk to you.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Speaking to us from his office in Ottawa on our live line, the Justice Minister, Mark McGuigan. Interesting point. He says the weaker people, there are some people, he says, who see this material, and they, as a result of seeing this material, will go out and engage in antisocial activity, as he says. And my point was, well, there may be a lot of people who witness this material and it does nothing. And his point back was, well, you have to protect, we have to act for the weaker members of society. So therefore, the people that are interested in this stuff who would not go out and rape or do whatever are, in a way, some people would say, going to be punished. How do you feel about that? Do you see it that way? 433-3121. Maybe you see it an entirely different way. Good morning, Bob. You're next on CFPL.
Good morning, Wayne.
Hi.
Wayne, I was listening this morning to the comments made by Mark McGuigan, who actually illustrated the point that I'd like to call in about today. When you asked him about what the government was planning on doing about pornography, one of the first things he said to you, and he said it rather without being ashamed of himself or embarrassed, he said that he's going to provide a new definition of the word obscenity to include other things. Now, what does that tell you right away? When somebody sits back and says, well, I'm going to supply a certain definition, the government will define what obscenity is. It makes the prospect of getting a fair trial in the sense of ever being charged under any legal ramifications, it makes the prospect of defending oneself literally impossible.
Not necessarily, because if you listen carefully enough, he was saying undue exploitation. And then I asked him about the court, you know, how are you going to enforce this thing? Well, it's going to go to the courts. So the courts are going to decide. The law as such is passed by the lawmaker or the parliamentarian. The courts are going to decide what is undue exploitation.
Well, what he's cleverly done is avoided his responsibility in deciding that for himself and put the poor courts in the decision of having to make a literally an impossible decision. You know, I bet you most people are not aware of what Section 159 in the Criminal Code says. It is regular indulgence and subjectivism. Let me tell you, they had to make up every single definition in that section to suit what, when you finally get through the whole maze of definition, to suit strictly one person's point of view and one person's opinion. You know, the law says that everyone commits an offense who makes, prints, publishes, distributes, circulates, or has in his possession for those purposes any obscene written matter, picture, model, phonograph record, or other thing whatsoever. Now, of course, it didn't define the word obscene. But not wanting to be left, leave that gap there, but of course, they have in subsection 8, I have this in front of me right now.
But the reason they're not defining the word obscene is that because when you objectively get into the courts, it to me, the court is going to do the defining. That is the law, not the law, but that to me is the function of the court, that they will take this subjective law that you say, okay, that's passed by, as you say, our subjective politicians, and they bring it into the realm of objectivity.
Well,
and so,
hang on a second.
So here's the judge, and he hears the evidence, and you've got the defense attorney, and you've got the crown attorney, and the judge is the one. That's our system. That's the beauty of our system. It's the judge that's doing that.
Now,
the judge may not always be right.
What evidence could he possibly present in court except a magazine or a publication in question, and what it comes down to is his opinion versus the other opinion.
But then who do you want to be the judge then, I guess, is the question.
Well, the individual, of course. But, you know, you have to look at the laws for what they are and what they can lead to. You know, when they say that obscenity is something or any publication of which the dominant characteristic of which is undue exploitation of sex or of sex and violence, etc., they leave undue undefined, they leave exploitation undefined, they leave dominant characteristic.
Yeah, the reason, you see, but you want everything defined and pigeonholed, and you have to give latitude, it seems to me, in these laws so that the courts can take the undefined things that you're talking about and say, okay, here is the story.
Well, sure, the court can say the definition of this is this, because I feel this way today. Do you remember the situation at Saskatoon's Tavern where one judge overturned the owner's acquittal on a previous charge? A person had been drawn into court twice. The state prosecuted him twice. And the issue there was that the first judge assumed, well, he was going to let the owner of Saskatoon's go. It was regarding a strip.
Yeah, okay, well, I don't want to get into specifics because I'm not entirely sure. Go ahead, finish your point.
Anyways, the first judge acquitted him, saying that such a performance did not harm anyone in the community, let us say.
Mm-hmm.
The second judge in the decision there said harm is not an issue, and simply said that because the act appeal to sexual titillation. Therefore, it was undue exploitation. Now, my goodness, what does that open up?
Yeah, but you see, the point is that I think if I hear what you're saying is that you disagree with that. And, you know, we've spoken many times on this program over the years, and I enjoy your calls. But
don't I have the right to disagree?
Well, of course.
Isn't that what country's all about?
Of course, but don't jump to conclusions here. Have you ever thought about going to law school?
Wayne, I've thought about going to law school. You're presenting me with a complete new career in my life. I've already... my career is rather in a different vein. But, you know, it's a funny thing. Here we have courts telling us that they're going to test, you know, the undue exploitation of sex. A test of that is according to community standards. And yet the government is sitting there controlling those community standards left, right, and center.
Now, do you...
Tell us that you can objectively decide what the community standards are.
Yeah, okay.
If they went by community standards, they look at the sales of these things. They, you know, they're the ones keep saying, oh, it's a billion, multi-billion dollar industry. Well, if that isn't objective evidence as to what the community standard is, I don't know what possibly could be.
Well, it's a $10 million a year business in Canada, according to this report. Bob, it's always a pleasure.
Okay, Wayne.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.